I like that theme, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty nice.
It's a nice one. Gets you in the mood.
I guess we're not supposed to like it. I mean, we're supposed to like it, but we shouldn't, you know. But it's nice.
Yeah.
I know.
We can like things you do.
Da-da, do-da-do-da. So, I wonder if I'm congruent with it.
Maybe. Well, I mean, that's up to us, really.
It's like the only time you could sing along, because it's you know.
Right. We own it.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, hey, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you doing?
I don't know if I'll be able to maintain that. Hey, I'm up
here. Hey, you're up here.
Guy.
Okay. Yeah.
This, I mean, I feel good.
Yeah.
But I feel like lounge chair good.
I got a nice calm going.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel you. I do feel a little calm.
Lounge chair good.
Yeah,
it's an nice, LCG.
Like... yeah. Those cool parabolic chairs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like they have over at that jazz club that we frequent.
Yeah.
When people frequent.
When that was a thing to do.
Yeah. Well, we're getting back.
We're getting back.
Yeah.
And we'll be again.
And that particular club, not to bore the listeners, but it's pretty open and airy.
Yeah, very
space,
open.
So it makes it nice.
Yeah.
Plus the parabolic chairs. And we were discussing, and we'll discuss now a little bit. Well, will we? Hey, what is the umbrella of this that we can hammer into these topics that we have this week?
We said we were going to leave it up to our future selves to figure that out.
We did, huh?
Yeah.
There's some physicality to them.
I think we could have a physicality umbrella, some sort of activity or physicalness.
Yeah.
It's broad. We're broad.
It's broad, but not so broad
not
as
ridiculous.
To be random.
No, not ridiculous.
Ha!
We didn't plan ahead this one.
I mean sometimes grouping them, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're fun. I mean, I think
mine's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just feel like my retention, my lounge chair goodness will let me let go of things. So I was going to ask to go first on this one. But I don't know if I should.
No, feel free.
Are you sure, though?
Yes, no, I've got, yeah, feel free to go first.
You feel like a complete hold on yours.
I think so.
I mean, I get all those facts up in my head, and they scream to get out.
Well, don't let me get in their way.
All right, without further ado.
All right.
I have in cahoots.
Cahoots.
Yeah.
Cahoots.
Cahoots.
It's fun.
We say it. I don't know. I guess we say it.
Yeah. They're in cahoots.
I think that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure I still use it here and again.
Sure. I feel like that one goes with from me as well.
It kind of is nefarious in a way. You're suggesting that I think my two neighbors are in cahoots to change the garbage pickup day, and I like it on the day it is. I don't know. I don't know how you.
So you're saying working together, but for something that's maybe underhanded to what you're expecting? Is that what you're.
Yeah, working together.
Working together.
But if you're using it.
Yeah.
You're usually not using it for something positive. Like
the
boss wouldn't say, hey, Steve, work with Mary in cahoots and get something great done. You wouldn't say that.
Right. We worked in cahoots to put together a party or something.
Right.
Right.
Unless it was a surprise party. Mm-hmm. Then maybe you'd use it.
Yeah, I hear you.
It had a little underbelly quality to the surprise element.
Somewhat sinister.
Yeah. if not pleasantly.
Yeah. I hear you.
So let me get into this.
All right.
Before the facts drop out.
Slip on right through.
Having defined it there, though, but... what I have to go through, and we're back where we find ourselves on the regular, but I'll get to that. Two main theories about this word, phrase origin, and a third sort of I will also encapsulate the best that I can. But idea number one for etymology, because we are in that place where we often find ourselves that, okay, there's some big holes here, so we're not 100% sure.
Mm-hmm.
And so let me just start. The theory one gets us to a place where it starts with the French cahoot.
All right.
Or, and this is familiar, cabane, which you might recall came up in episode 14 when we covered shebang.
Okay.
So this was a cabin,
mm-hmm.
like a rinky dink, three sided maybe, or quickly.
Okay, like a
thrown together mm-hmm. hut or cabin.
Yeah.
And there's this notion that cahoots came from that, and that idea is that, oh sure, some people went into a poorly constructed cabin together and talked behind our backs or whatever and planned a thing. And I give this to you first, but it is decidedly among those out there that do this as a favorite.
The pros.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a favorite definition.
That is a favorite etymological source.
So going behind into a cabin, say.
Yeah.
Talking about someone else.
Yes. Kind of what
okay.
Now, I gave it first because I disagree with our friends. I think I'm going to give you that.
Yeah.
Cabin, a poor hut, French word, meaning it's adopted from a Scot English 16th century. But in its time in that area, the OED shows it as only used a bit. And we're talking 1500s.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the odd thing about it.
Yeah, it wasn't widely spread.
Not only was it not widely spread, mm-hmm. We see cahoots the way that we use it not until 1827 in the American South, in Georgia, are the first to say this way in print. I hadn't read newspapers for nothing. General government and misinstration are gone in cahoot to undermine and overrule the undertakings of the free people of Georgia. I just gave them an accent as applicable to how it was written here. This is reported by linguist Ben Zimmer, found. Yeah.
And you said
1827.
Okay.
Also, Chronicles of Pineville came up a lot in searching for original initial uses in print. And that was some collection by William T. Thompson about backwoods Georgia again. Exact date unknown, early 1800s. I wouldn't swear he wasn't in cahoot with the devil. I gave him a different twang there.
That's a nice twang.
Yeah, do what I can.
Yeah.
So they want us, the people that want us to go from, it went from being in a cabin or just the cabin itself,
mm-hmm.
then it sleeps for 300 years
mm-hmm.
and then arrives in Georgia under this idea already that it means we're conspiring together.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
Yeah.
I don't like it one bit. And it's funny because the one that I'm going to be a strong proponent of does not have, but neither does this one.
No support behind it.
Support. But it makes a lot more sense. And so I'm unfolding the story a little more differently than I normally would.
I'm gotcha.
Just sort of explaining it as I go here, you know?
All right.
But cohort,
mm-hmm.
sorry to say, Oxford English Dictionary, yeah. my friends. It's a Roman word that they used for a band of soldiers, 300 to 600 soldiers in a group was a cohort.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that is a little while back in history for Roman soldiers. So, more modern day
mm-hmm.
definition on cohort, and I say modern day, I'm just saying just bring us into the United States. Sure, a band of soldiers, but another definition being any group or band, and still another way to define it is an associate or in association.
So, yes.
Come on, people. So, a cohort, again, from old 16th century Spanish and French, a company or a band. It is used in the South and West to denote a company or union of men for a predatory excursion and sometimes for partnership in business.
Alrighty.
I beg again, come on, people.
Come on, people.
But there is a third idea that deserves a little bit of attention.
Okay.
And you may decide a lot of attention. You know, we have these words, and when we come across them on occasion, maybe modern current English doesn't employ it as much mm-hmm. as we used to.
Mm-hmm.
But putting like a k prefix on things in the evolution of a word, like let's say kerfuffle, mm-hmm. caboodle,
okay,
those sorts of things. It might have been a ker, it might be a ka, ko, but it's sort of an additive together, mutual sort of prefix.
Mm-hmm.
So you have that. That's a togethery thing. And then there are some sketchy etymological histories to the word or variations of the word hoot, which would be in Scottish, and it might mean some sort of business concerns, and it might also mean that in some sort of negative connotation about those business concerns.
Yeah.
So the ka and the hoot is speculated that it came together, but who brought it together? And where did anyone use it like that? And what is the proof of that?
Yeah.
Nobody knows, but this fellow, Frederick Cassidy, he wrote the Dictionary of American Regional English and wanted to advocate for this etymological idea.
Yeah.
I applaud him, but I also ask him to go and get back in line with his shirt and his teeth because... So, my conclusion is opposite of some other people's conclusions in this, but I mean, I don't see where they got theirs saying that it came from the hut or the cabin. It just doesn't make sense to me. It makes a lot more sense that cohort being a Spanish and French origin
mm-hmm.
easily found its way to Georgia in the early 1800s, and then our southern friends yeah. just sort of made it their own, if you like.
Yeah, or misheard, or you know how they do, well, we do. You hear something, you say it back, it's like, oh, that's slightly different, but now that's the word.
That comes up so often, right? That's what we do. So it's a natural thing for the language to take mm-hmm. that course.
Oh, for sure.
And
oh,
we
yeah.
can understand
yeah.
French introducing yeah. it back in the 1700s, you know, in that time period, and it making its way there easily,
right.
instead of the other one that yeah. went to sleep for 300 mm-hmm. years and came back entirely different.
Still, you said it was still a French word, so I guess it could have done a similar path, but the fact
yeah,
that
there's
it was
no
unused
path
for so long,
for
it seems, yeah, like that's...
And this one, A, its yeah. original definition is
right, to
very those. Similar. Like, it's an army, it's a group. And so you're in a group against me. You're in a, you know what I mean? If I'm going to fight that army, I'm going to fight that cohort. And then, yeah. so they're in cohort against me. That I mean, cohort, it's yeah, just right. is right there.
yeah.
So I implore
it does seem.
Other professional lexicographers to get on the bandwagon with me and and agree that cohort is cahoot. And that's cahoot. Ray, I think you have.
You just teased it.
Aha.
I am going to jump on that bandwagon with that.
On the bandwagon.
On the bandwagon. Nice. Nice work. That was good. Excellent work.
Thanks.
Yeah, jump on the bandwagon. So,
yeah.
Supporting a hobby, idea, person, etc., after it has become popular or successful. Right?
Sure.
Anything, TV show, whatever, band, anything in there, etc. It's a wide swath. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the bandwagon is named, well, jumping on the bandwagon is named after the word bandwagon, which is not the most creative name for a wagon that would carry a band.
I mean, it gets the job done with no confusion.
No, and it in early on, it's two words, but our bandwagon, I feel like, is one word. When you would write it, what would you write? Would you write two words or one word if you wrote bandwagon? A lot of people write it as one word, I'll say now. But it used to be.
I'd put a hyphen in it.
That's all. That also counts.
I definitely would put a hyphen in it.
I think I'm going to split the difference and put a hyphen here.
Definitely.
We've all been there.
Hyphen is a dash.
Yes. Yeah. So this was a literal wagon that carried a band. A lot of folks really put a weight into a circus band specifically. A lot of people seem to believe that the first time it appeared in print was in an autobiography of the life of P.T. Barnum, which was published in 1855. The quote is, "At Vicksburg, we sold all our land conveyances, excepting our horses, and the bandwagon." Literal usage of it, obviously.
Yeah.
But that's not the first literal usage, though P.T. Barnum was a very famous carnival person here in America. Circus folk person. Ringleader, that's the word. But I came across an earlier usage of this phrase, 1847.
1847.
Also referencing a circus, Stone and McCollum Circus. We are reminded that on Saturday last, the steamboat John Hancock brought down some large additions to their equestrian paraphernalia. 10 baggage wagons, a magnificent band wagon capable of holding 20 musicians, and 20 horses of the finest breed. These are literal bandwagons, obviously.
Wait, 20 horses go on the wagon?
No, there was a comma. They were in this list.
Oh, that was another one of the
gear,
three things.
The
large
equestrian paraphernalia,
yeah,
which I was not prepared to read.
But yeah, I did all right.
Thank you. So back in the 1800s, I mean, circuses were entertainment, obviously. And they apparently had large sort of showy parades through the towns that they would, you know, to kind of drum up business. Like, hey, we're in town. The circus is in town, everybody.
Right.
Have you heard?
Then we're going to go park on the outskirts in that field.
Right.
And set up.
Set up. So these parades attracted, you know, village folk and were certainly good about drumming up the business. Bandwagons were a part of those parades and obviously loud and hard to miss.
Sure.
Well, so, I'm sorry.
No, well, with 20 musicians.
Right, at least. So, the legend is that Dan Rice, who is a very famous circus clown at this time, and was, I saw quoted, the most famous man you've never heard of, because I've never heard of him.
No.
But he was the first to rent out his bandwagon for use for political campaigns. And some folks will lay the birth of jump on the bandwagon directly at his feet. Like, he invented this phrase. In the 1840s, he worked for Zachary Taylor's presidential campaign.
Oh, he's come up before.
Yeah, he's come up, right. 1840s-ish. So he invited Taylor to come campaign, like, on the circus bandwagon. He's like, we're going to have this crowd. We're going to do a thing. Come on the bandwagon. Yeah, I saw that this... he was like super popular, this guy. He was a household name, that they say, and that he eventually ran himself for president in 1868.
Dan Rice
it was an innovator, and he coined the terms one horse show and greatest show.
One horse town.
I saw he was the popularization of the barrel style French cuff was thanks to him, and also that he very well may be the, not like a model, live model sense, but the model in which that Orwellian, like, Uncle Sam Wants You propaganda poster.
Yeah.
You know that Uncle Sam, like that picture? Like this, that was based on Dan Rice.
Go home.
Yeah, that's what I read. Because his costuming was like American flaggy, and he had a star-spangled cape and top hat, and apparently he had that, like, chin beard that, I mean, it wasn't white, I guess, at the time. But you know how it's got that weird chin beard Uncle Sam has?
Yeah.
Yeah, so this was perhaps all Dan Rice.
And no photographs from that time.
Oh, so. No, there's pictures of him. Yeah, he looks like it.
Oh, there's photographs.
Yeah. Huh. Daguerreotypes, aren't they called?
Yeah, tintypes and yeah. Daguerreotypes. Yeah.
Yeah, there's one of him I saw, and there were some other sketches, for sure, you know. But yeah, no, I saw a couple pictures. But, well, you know, tintypes, like you said. But that got off track.
Sure.
toward the end of the 1800s, people had caught on to the fact that this wagon pulling a band can capture people's attention.
Go home.
So politicians started using bandwagons and kind of do similar parades through towns of a circus nature on their campaign trail.
Oh, man, you're in this little town.
Yeah.
And you hear that and you get excited thinking, oh, this week's going to be fun.
Right.
We'll have the circus. Right. And then, no, it's just some jamoke on a wagon hucking himself.
Yeah. You're like, this isn't the Tumblers.
Yeah, you're going to fool me a couple of times.
I mean, honestly, Dan Rice had an incredible, it sounded like a great act. I mean, lots of stuff, strongman things, you know, yeah.
So he brought some circus paraphernalia with him, some circusy stuff entertain people.
I think on his ride with Zachary Taylor, perhaps. I'm not sure. I mean, these other bandwagons that then were a result of that, with the politicians putting on their own shows, would have some pomp, but they wouldn't have, circus performers necessarily.
Old ZT had it going on.
I mean, he only made it the 1 year, right?
Yeah. I'm
pretty sure. Yeah. He's one of our
caretaker
presidents. Where was I? Oh, politicians. So his campaigns became more successful than other politicians sought to get on this you'd ride the coattails, as it were. You'd hop on their bandwagon to also promote them and yourself, these other politicians. And when you did that, you got more public time with people, and then you'd get more success.
Yeah.
You'd assume that the success of the original campaigner would rub off on you, necessarily, like in a hopping on the bandwagon way.
Sure.
1887 Chicago Tribune used this phrase basically just to mean opportunism. The candidates for speaker are vigorously trying to silence the senatorial question until after organization. And in the patriotic effort to keep their own interests from being lost in those of the senatorial candidates, they are being aided by the desire of all newcomers to steer clear of expressions on the successor to General Logan until they see what shape that fight will take and can see their way clear for getting into the bandwagon with the winner. They're saying they're going to wait and hop on the bandwagon.
Yeah.
The winner here.
I'm going to see. Are you doing well?
Right.
All right. Lend a hand. I'm going to hop up there.
I'm going to hop up on here and get this crowd to see me with you, and hopefully some of your whatever will rub off on me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there are records of this phrase used in political speeches throughout the late 1800s, essentially, after the circuses. Usually, I mean, at this point, they're trying to now warn other voters of don't jump on their bandwagon in haste, because I've got some other stuff and maybe they suck and maybe I'm great. So don't hop on their bandwagon. Come on my bandwagon.
Right.
As we see. And then eventually, you know, it does stop meaning the literal riding of the bandwagon and starts to refer to jumping into anything that was popular. I saw that there really isn't a specific transition noted, but
seems like it would be a feathering into figurativeness.
It's 1899, so I mean, we're still in the 1800s. I mean, this is just
as late as you can get in there.
Right. But I mean, I think this is just a Teddy Roosevelt example. When I once became sure of the majority, they tumbled over each other to get aboard the bandwagon. It still seems kind of literal there.
Totally.
Honest. What the heck? That's not figurative at all.
Well, but it still can be. That's the funny thing about figurativeness.
Yeah, and the bandwagon comes from a literal bandwagon that that hauled the members of the band.
Yeah.
I touched upon this sort of when we did Gig, the music episode, because a gig is also a carriage pulled by a horse, the small carriage, and also then I heard that there were also larger carriages pulled by horses called gigs that could hold musicians on them, almost like a bandwagon. And that's kind of in a similar time that the bandwagon, I feel like it's hard. They seem to happen simultaneously, and the gig is more of it sounds like Southern New Orleans kind of word for the carriage.
The gig.
Yeah, but the gig does mean a small carriage with just like a two-seater, kind of just a passenger car. But I also saw it in that it did pull sometimes musicians occasionally.
Right, and then they did that thing to sort of avoid getting the license or getting fined.
Right.
They'd be in the bandwagon, they'd be on the gig.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
But
But
this bandwagon thing,
yeah,
I mean, it's easy to see that make that transition.
Oh, yeah.
You'd love some proof in print and seeing it go along. Mm-hmm. And we rarely get that.
Yeah, right.
But at this one, you don't even really need it. You're like, I could see exactly that.
Jumping up on bandwagons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then just to start saying that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why would you stop saying that? You used to say that.
But I think Dan Rice is the hero of this story.
Dan?
he was a man about town, it sounded like. He ran for president. He was a honorary colonel. Zachary Taylor made him an honorary colonel, I believe, for doing all that good work.
Yeah. I never heard of this fellow.
That's what that also said that, the most famous man you'd never heard of.
Mm-mm-mm.
Yeah, so that's my bandwagon.
Well, I hope our audience will jump on the bandwagon with our sponsors.
Allswell believes in the power of a good night's sleep for all. Their products feature innovative technology and unbelievable comfort and support without deflating your wallet. Combining the best of both worlds, the Allswell features hybrid mattress technology with memory foam and individually wrapped coils. For a winning blend of comfort and support, follow the link in the show notes for financing as low as 0%, a 100-night risk-free trial, free shipping and returns, and a 10-year limited warranty. Designed to make good sleep accessible to all. Real luxury, unreal prices. AllswellHome.com. Whole Nine Yards is sponsored by the Roberto Clemente Museum. Located in a restored engine house in Pittsburgh's revitalized Lawrenceville neighborhood, the Clemente Museum is a showcase of the largest exhibited collection of baseball artifacts, works of art, literature, photographs, and memorabilia related to Roberto Clemente and his life in baseball. Shop the store for clothing and other items featuring the iconic 21 logo, and purchase tour tickets for the museum at ClementeMuseum.com. Enter promo code W9Y21 for a 10% discount on hats and tees. That's ClementeMuseum.com, promo code W9Y21. Whole Nine Yards is sponsored by Big Science Music. Big Science Music is a Cannes and One Show award-winning original music and sound boutique, providing scoring, sound design, radio, podcast, and audio post-production services for the advertising, film, and video industries. Big Science Music also offers ADR, casting, and project management. Big Science Music's reels, full capabilities, and more can be found at BigScienceMusic.com. That's BigScienceMusic.com.
So that's great and exciting.
Yeah, I think so.
And plus, so the cahoots and the bandwagon,
yeah,
we continue on this nebulous, umbrellic path.
Towards?
More information.
Well, thanks. Yeah, thanks.
That hurts. So I'll jump us in.
No, sure.
Because words. I have this expression, tooth and nail.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's funny expression.
Tooth and nail.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's usually used in the, you know, he fought me tooth and nail on this idea, but they finally went for it, and then it turns out they liked it.
Right.
You know, the Oxford English Dictionary, OED, suggests that it was always a figurative idiom, but still, in as much to say vigorous attack, defense,
mm-hmm.
Vigorously, fiercely, and with utmost effort.
Vigor.
Yeah, vigor comes up a lot.
Yeah.
In this.
It implies like flailing about, really. I mean, in my mind.
Okay.
Like you're like really getting in there.
Really, really, yeah, having at it.
Vigorously. Yeah. Right?
Sure.
Like cartoony. Like we always say, we see the cartoon cloud with the little expletives pop out of it and whatever.
Yeah.
As things go rolling by.
Yeah, like a fight in a cartoon always just turns into a, because it's too much to draw.
Yeah, you're not going to draw all that.
Yeah, this is make some cloud bubble things.
Yeah, we got this.
So it traces, though, to Latin, to an old proverb, which I find myself unable to say. Toto corpor atique omnibus ungulus.
All right.
Which means with all of the body and with every nail.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And here we're 16th century earlier yet than that.
Yeah.
So this is old.
With an E after it.
Yeah. Most definitely gets the E. The odd thing about this one is that how hidden in plain sight some of it was that I, you know, to me anyway, because yeah. I walk around and I just didn't see some things. But let me, before I get into that, it made me go, wait a second, tooth.
Mm-hmm.
Long in the tooth.
Mm-hmm.
Bite off more than you could chew. Bite your tongue.
Okay.
Scarce as hen's teeth. Fine tooth comb. Sweet tooth. Eye for eye. Tooth for tooth. Look at all of those.
I like that slam poem. That was awesome.
Yeah. But there's more if you act now. There's nail. Dead as a doornail. Oh, I'll try to slam poetry read it then. Okay. Dead. As a doornail hard, as nails tough, as nails bed of nails, a nail in someone else's coffin, nail in the coffin, nail biter angry enough to chew nails. How'd that go?
That was nice.
Yeah, so there are a lot of
yeah.
tooth idioms and nail idioms.
Mm-hmm. I get what I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Yeah, but there's also another thing that came up that's just an aside, but I feel like I have to mention it because I never heard it before, but when I dug into it, looks like a lot of people say it.
Okay, what's your...
And no one has ever said it to me or written it in any book that I've read.
Alrighty.
Tooth and tongue, so as to say I'll fight tooth and tongue, which is a corruption, as I've discovered.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That because I guess there is this idiom hammer and tong, which is the true tong idiom, and it sort of means, so you know, if you're a blacksmith,
mm-hmm.
you're hammering something. You need it all the time. You ever try to nail a little brad into some wood and go get yourself a pair of needle nose pliers to hold the brad, you know, because you're gonna smash your fingers.
I can't nail things. Yeah.
So a blacksmith would have this tong. I call it a set of tongs, but I don't know if that's right or not. because some people say scissors.
Yeah.
But some people say, go get me a scissor. And like, you want both, right? You want this, you want to be able to, you want to be able to cut, right?
Right.
But to them, a scissor is the whole, is the pair is the, of is blades. The
thing. Yeah. Right.
So same with tong.
Pants.
This is a tooth and nail thing, so I don't have that information for you, whether it's tong or tongs.
Yeah.
Get back to me or write in.
Let us know.
But to fight or to work hammer and tong is to work strenuously. You're hammering. Mm-hmm. You're mm-hmm. using all you have. You got that hot nail. You're holding it with the tongs. You're hammering. So people have morphed tooth and nail and hammer and tong together to make tooth and tong. It has nothing to do with one thing or the other. It's just stuff people do.
It's a bunch of stuff people did.
Yeah.
Okay. So they're not related, you're saying, at all? You sure? Did like the nail isn't the...
No.
Okay.
Well, I mean, hammer and tong.
Right.
Or tooth and nail.
Right, but we didn't go like hammer and nail and then tooth and nail. Like, there's no path that goes like that way.
No.
That's all.
No, just people mash stuff up. They're mashers of stuff.
Just smash it up.
So the earliest use in print seems to be 1535 in Sir Thomas More's In a Dialogue of Comfort and Tribulation.
Okay.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. And that whole bit of story is superfluous. It's a Henry VIII story and yada, yada, yada. Oh, okay. Suffice it to say, they used the idiom tooth and nail. Mm-hmm. Fight tooth and nail, and they used it the same way we use it.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
You don't, I mean, I read it all.
Gotcha.
I will spare
I read it
you,
all,
fellow
so you
listeners. but here's the damnedest thing. And maybe our listeners are much wiser than me, of course, and will go, yeah, Jay, you jackwagon. But I didn't know. I didn't see this coming.
Okay.
You see, because I guess the fact that people turn hammer and tong, tooth and hammer, something, it does play into this notion that I always just pictured a nail.
Mm-hmm.
With which you would use a hammer.
Mm-hmm.
But it is not that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fingernail.
Yeah.
I didn't know.
Okay.
So it is like a claw.
Yeah.
That is to say, you're fighting with everything you have. You're biting and clawing. That is what it is. And Jay didn't know. You say nail to me and not fingernail.
Gotcha.
I'm on a metal spike with a head on it. I'm right. Off to a big dish of peas.
Sure. No, they said nail. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hear you.
And fingernail, then it made me double check. Wait a minute, mister.
Yeah.
When did we start calling that a fingernail?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, turns out 13th yeah. century.
Oh,
so
pretty much.
Yeah. Like I had to check that one.
Keeping times anyway. Yeah. Yes.
So, you know, David Copperfield used it in 1850. Many have used it.
You mean Charles Dickens?
Charles Dickens used it.
And David Copperfield.
David Copperfield. Well, David Copperfield would have said it, right?
The book. Yeah, I guess. Well, yeah. Maybe.
So we don't know.
We don't know. You're right.
But it is, regardless.
Yeah.
Just that. And it just meant fight with all you had.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly people in... 15th century and 16th century accepted nail as fingernail,
mm-hmm.
and it stood in for claw, which is why that cartoon fighting smoke ball
right.
really sets the stage for what that is. Yeah. Couldn't be more right, as
picture,
it were.
Picture windmill arms going at it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's really simple. For me, hidden in plain sight, because they throw you off with that nail thing. It's like, what is that?
They set you up with the tooth.
Right, I have a tooth, but then now I have a piece of metal.
Yeah.
What am I to do with these two things? How do I fight?
With this.
With this.
I hear you.
You know.
No, I mean, it's, yeah.
So with that, I rest my case. What have you?
I am stumped.
Stumped, you say?
Stumped. I'm stumped.
All right.
Perplexed or confused. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm stumped.
Stumped the band.
With how you stumped the band. Stumped the bandwagon. So I saw a lot of folks suggest that this actually may come from cricket. The game.
Oh, man, the cricket.
It is a play. One can be stumped in cricket. And that I'm going to do my best.
Yeah.
To explain this.
Oh, yeah.
No, I think I got it. I'm going to relate it to baseball. But I think I got it. I watched some videos and stuff.
The most popular sport in the world, I'm told.
Cricket.
Yeah.
Sure. So to be stumped, a batsman is out if the wicketkeeper removes the stumps with the ball when the batsman is out of his ground. So that's the words. I'm gonna go back through now and explain it to the us.
Yeah.
Who don't know cricket as well, and I don't know sports as well in general, so it's extra fun. I'm gonna do my best, but feel free to write in and correct me, please. I'm happy to learn, obviously. So. I'm going to relate it all to baseball, just so you can understand, Americans can understand.
Yeah.
You've got the bowler who relates to our pitcher, our baseball pitcher, the batsman, you know, related to the batter, baseball, and the wicketkeeper, who I would relate to the baseball catcher. Okay.
All right.
You got me so far?
I'm with you so far.
Sweet. So when the bowler sends the ball toward the batsman, when the pitcher pitches the ball towards the batter, the batsman can sort of take a few steps and swing into hitting the ball. It doesn't have to stay stationary which would be in ground, in his ground, it sounds like. He can move out of his ground. So if a batter in baseball were to kind of like take a few steps out of the batting box into the pitch, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can do that.
That's, not in baseball, but, but in the crickets.
Right, so he's coming out of his ground.
Okay.
And when you do that, if you don't hit the ball, the wicketkeeper can get the ball, the catcher will get the ball behind you. And it seems like it is the wicketkeeper's job to just like F up this wicket. He's getting the ball and the ball can grab it and throw it at it, or it can bounce off of him or whatever, any sort of way. But he wants to stump the batter, which is throwing the ball, getting the ball to hit the wicket, which are three perpendicular sticks coming up out of the ground. And the stumps are at the top connecting them. They're loosely connecting the three sticks. They can be easily knocked away. Is that making sense?
A bit.
So he just kind of throws the ball at these sticks, and then the little stumps kind of just pop off of the thing. Again, with it seems like, I'm going to say some effort, but minimal effort. It's easy to do. It's something that happens all the time. People get stumped in cricket all the time.
Huh.
Yeah, he catches it and throws the ball at the wicket.
So it's a cricket term.
Stumped. You're saying, no, I'm saying one can be stumped in cricket. Yes, 100%. This is a play in cricket. You have been stumped. That is what that is.
Something that a cricket announcer might announce. So-and-so player has been stumped.
Yes, still.
Okay.
To this day. Cricket is an old sport. It goes back hundreds of years.
World's most popular sport, I'm
hundreds
told.
Of years. I mean, yeah. Baseball's not that old.
No.
This evidence lacks... No. This explanation lacks a lot of evidence that would link it to the phrase, and it doesn't really match the meaning of the expression because you're not perplexed or confused. You took a risk and you lost, in a sense, and now you're stumped. But, you know, that was I enjoyed learning about cricket, and I'm glad to expand my sports knowledge in some way.
How about that?
Yeah. It seems to be more likely that this term... derives again from, you know, it's abroad here, saying from plows sticking when they hit tree stumps when you're plowing. I've got 1833, but there's even some older ones of using it in the figurative sense. Even my good old friend, I'm stumped. I just got a letter from the general. It's written in like a twangy way, but I didn't read it like a twangy way.
No, you didn't.
No, I didn't. I wasn't prepared. I mean, you brought so much and I just wasn't ready.
I over-twanged. So I have a plow in a field.
You have a plow in a field and you're going along.
Everything's nice.
Exactly. And you hit a tree stump and now you're stopped.
It'd be a jolting.
Sure. But you're like, well, crap. Now what do I do? I can't. It's stuck on a tree. It's stuck on a tree stump.
I hope I have a reverse.
just rock it back and forth. Get some kitty litter under there. But the term stumped is predated by a term stumper. Stumper, this was slang for difficult, it sounds like prose writing, cited in an 1807 edition of the New York Magazine. They happened to run their heads full butt against a new reading. Now, this was a stumper. That was 1807. So before the dude got stumped by his letter from the general.
Oh, so we're plowing a field with horses now in this time period.
Oh yeah, no, we're definitely.
Well, yeah, I was picturing a guy in a tractor with sort of like a Eli Whitney.
Gotcha.
Gin thing. What do you call that?
Cotton gin.
Yeah.
No. This is we got a horse and a literal plow, or probably a oxen. Maybe,
oh, so it's just
plow.
Like yeah, the horse
yeah,
gets
once
like
you, once
yanked.
You nail that.
It's like, damn, man, it's lead me anywhere. In the direction where there's no stumps. Got me walking. Yeah.
Nice. But it seems like stump goes back even farther than the 1800s. Oh. I saw OED 1430, John Lydgate. Though I go not upright, but stump and halt for lack of eloquence. It just seems pretty like you know, like the tooth and nail thing. It's like, oh, stump to like trip on a tree stump, this is what they're saying, was like, okay, that would happen to you. You'd be stumped if you just got stumped. But it gives birth to a perplexed, but it also seems to give birth to the word stumble, which I didn't pick up here until right now. I mean, not right now, but when I was doing the research, I'm like, oh, stump and stumble, right? That makes sense. You'd stumble over a tree stump.
You'd stumble.
The term originally meant a tree stump over which one trips. The stump, like stump, it literally is. Yeah. So like stumbling block and being stumped, like have a, I don't know, right?
I just wish it were stumbling block. And then I could digest it fully and move on happily.
Yeah. And that, I mean, honestly, and that dates back to the first figurative use is in the 15th century, which is that kind of 1430s. But yeah, the stump meaning a tree stump, which one trips over, it seems to be a definition of stump, stumped for a long time.
But we've been farming forever.
And we've been walking and tripping over tree stumps for a long time.
Way. Yeah. I'm still doing it.
It's like you get some folk. Yeah, right. Exactly. Some folks, they were trying to relate it to, you know, frontier, American frontier, going, making new roads and the tree stumps being hitting axles of our wagons, things like that. And I'm like, okay, sure. But we've been doing these things longer than that.
A lot longer.
We've been tripping over trees for hundreds of years, probably thousands of years, you know?
Yeah.
We've had trees. We've tripped over them.
Yeah.
Ancient Romans tripped over some trees.
Sure, yeah, caveman.
You're tripping over cavemen. You're tripping over some trees.
But he wasn't plowing.
No, but he's going to, yeah, he got stumped along the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this one is kind of a literally one. Yeah.
No. It's,
yeah. Not as stumped.
No.
With the definition
I
of stumped.
I like that one just fine.
Yeah, thanks.
Sure.
Yeah. And we learned something about cricket. But please write in and let us know if I got something wrong. And you can write to...
Oh, man, we need a bigger mailbox if they...
Technically, it's an infinite size, but right. Only so many characters. Yeah, Whole Nine Yards Pod on Twitter, Instagram, and Reddit user, and then Whole Nine Yards Podcast on Facebook.
On Facebook?
Yes.
Oh, we're at that point in the show.
I think, right?
Yeah, okay. That really snuck up on me.
Well, I saw a way
in
there.
Yeah. Do, 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 do. So we're there.
That's almost the end of the show. That was the segment on Syphil and Ollie. Welcome to It's Almost the End of the Show was a segment that was on right before the end of the show.
Sure.
I said that. Welcome to It's Almost the End of the Show.
Yeah, no. And now it is the end of the show. So I'm Jay.
And I'm Ray.
And we're not idioms.
Whole Nine Yards is written, recorded, and produced by Big Science Pods. Learn more at wholenineyards.org or contact Whole Nine Yards by emailing heyyou@wholenineyards.org. That's heyyou@wholenineyards.org. Whole Nine Yards theme music composed by Big Science Music.